could possibly fit into the world. Reno decided to leave personal matters out of it for the moment. And now? Now something other than Bishop forced the issue. Maybe it took a cosmic kick in the ass to get us here, but we're here. Maybe we're even a team. Surprised, she said, "If you knew that and were willing, why the hell have you been a pain in the ass about it?" "I didn't say I was willing. I said I was kicked in the ass and now I'm here, in the game. I don't know any more than you do about what happens next, or how I'll feel about being in the game when this is over with, assuming we survive, and neither do you."
"Huh," Reno said slowly.
"Turn left ahead," Dalton told her.
13. Thursday, October 9. Archer didn't immediately realize that the SCU team he'd called in to help had more or less vanished. He didn't realize for several hours, in part because he and Katie went to talk to Stacy Bowers, and that took time, because neither of them wanted to make the awful situation even worse for her. Not that she was able to help them. She had not noticed any sign from her husband that suicide was in any way on his mind, or even that anything was bothering him, and she maintained with absolute assurance that Sam would never kill himself. Never. When they returned to the station, both discouraged, and both tensely anticipating bad news of some kind, since the overwhelming events of the day before could not be the end of it all, Archer met briefly with the doctor and okayed moving Jim Lonigan to the hospital, where he'd be kept sedated and under restraints, at least for the present. A temporary measure, the doctor had noted. Archer didn't know what the hell a permanent measure would be, and hoped to God he wouldn't have to make that call. After supervising the transfer, via ambulance, of Lonigan to the hospital, Archer went into the conference room, where Katie was sitting with post-mortem reports spread out around her, and her gaze fixed on the big map of the valley pinned to one of the boards. As Archer came into the room, she said,
"Jill's working fast. She's done the post-mortems on the three Gardner kids."
"Anything we didn't already know?"
"Not really. Though she does agree that Luke Gardner was probably killed at least a couple hours before the other kids were killed. Says Ed Gardner was killed last. She's working on his post now."
"And when was the other stuff done?"
Steadily, Katie said, "All the post-mortem injuries happened within a couple of hours of death."
Archer tried not to imagine how horrifying that scene must have been, and had to imagine, of course.
"Leslie Gardner is now officially in a coma," Katie continued, "and the docs say it's a deep one. Beyond that, they aren't offering anything we didn't know before. They don't know if or when she'll come out of it, or what shape she'll be in if or when she does. Though, I guess we can make some educated guesses based on Elliot Weston and on Jim."
"Yeah, I guess."
He looked around.
"Where are our federal friends?"
"Looking for the bad guy," Katie replied.
Archer lifted a brow at her.
"The bad guy? You mean the bad guy who apparently used some kind of crazy energy to persuade a woman to murder and dismember her husband and kids? A real estate agent to murder two strangers? Sam Bowers to kill himself? And Jim Lonigan to nearly kill his wife? That bad guy?"
Katie nodded and said immediately, "I had to put two deputies and the front desk on incoming calls. A lot of calls, Jack. People are scared. They have a lot of questions and no answers. Except word seems to have gotten around that as horrible as the deaths have been, the killers weren't in their right minds when they committed the crimes. People are asking if it's something in the water or the food supply. I guess that's a lot more likely than energy."
"You think?"
She cleared her throat. We have reports of the same sort of things we already know about. Tension, headaches, the feeling that their heads are stuffed full of cotton. A few have mentioned their skin crawling. Tempers seem to be unusually short, and we've had some calls about loud disagreements and fistfights. Other than recommending that everyone be cautious and vigilant, skip the caffeine and see a doctor if they're worried, there isn't a whole hell of a lot we can tell them to help them protect themselves. Even assuming the threat's still high, so far we have no idea if there are any visible symptoms to watch out for.
I hate assuming, Archer muttered.
Yeah, me too.
Hollis and Reese didn't have anything to say?
I told you, Jack, they're out looking for the cause. The rest of their team should be getting settled in the hotel, and then they'll be out searching as well.
For this energy monster. It was clear that, today at least, Archer had had second thoughts about what he'd been told the night before. With rest and time to think, he was far less likely today to just accept whatever he was told. Katie sighed.
Jack, I know how hard it is to believe something like that, but we both know what happened yesterday was not in any way normal. And absent some other explanation, doesn't it make sense to listen to people with a lot more experience than we have with weird and crazy?
Nothing in this entire situation makes sense. He sighed. But you're probably right. Now tell me how we're supposed to write this up in our reports. That actually hadn't occurred to Katie, but she was nothing if not quick on her feet, even when she was sitting down.
Let's not put speculation in our reports, just the facts. I mean, unless and until we have more than speculation.
Uh-huh. He sighed. Every car we have out patrolling?
Like we decided last night, yes. Everybody is under orders to look for anything that sticks out to them as different or unusual. And the guys on the call-in lines know to take any complaint as serious. The last half dozen deputies are still out talking to family and friends of the victims. The dead victims and the ones still alive.
I know Jim's still out, and the doctor apparently means him to stay out for the time being. Weston?
Pretty much the same as he was this morning. Worse than yesterday, but not catatonic. Yet, anyway.
Archer leaned on the table, staring down at the post-mortem reports. Did Hollis say anything before they went out about what might happen today?
No. She said the whole town's on edge, and that's all she was feeling. Sort of a flood of emotion, I take it. She said she'd get to a landline and call in if she feels or senses anyone struggling the way Jim did. Anyone in trouble.
And until then, we wait.
I'm afraid so, Jack.
Hollis had thought about it and talked it over with Reese, and had decided that her team needed to be as protected as possible, especially after the brief but chilling attempt to get inside her own mind. But since only three of her team possessed shields she felt would be strong enough, Reese, Victoria, and Galen, it was impossible to send everybody out in pairs. And she wasn't at all sure about Galen, whether he would even accept.
I'll go with Olivia, he told her.
Hollis fought to keep from betraying surprise. Now, how had Bishop known? She was also aware of a surge of rather panicked uncertainty from Olivia, and smiled at the seemingly most fragile psychic on her team. I think that's a good idea. Reno can make up the third place. Sully, you go with Victoria and Logan, and Dalton comes with Reese and me. Dalton, not so angry today but very closed in on himself for someone without a shield, merely nodded without comment. He really was not what Hollis had expected, at all. It was Victoria who said somewhat uneasily,
I can't extend my shield to cover anyone else, Hollis.
Yeah, I know.
We can't cover everybody with a borrowed shield, which is why I want one strong, shielded mind with each group. Part of your job is to keep an eye on the others in your group. Looking for anything that bugs you. Distraction. Any actions or words that seem out of character. Just anything you don't like. All of you know each other better than Galen, Reese, and I know you. You are more likely to notice something strange. Victoria said,
Damn. You mean something like an attempt to control somebody?
Yeah, it's possible, Victoria. So we have to be prepared for the possibility.
Okay, but what happens if any of us notice something weird?
As soon as he found out about the energy, and especially about how screwed up communications are in the valley, Bishop had the technicians at the house work on a warning and tracking system for us. They're installed in each vehicle as part of the radios.
Ah, Sully said. That's what was in the bag Bishop sent with me to give Galen.
Yeah. Galen installed the enhanced radios in the three vehicles we brought to Prosperity yesterday and last night.
So we're all on the same channel, so to speak.
Right. You'll see tracking dots on the screens for each vehicle. That's one reason we're going to spread out in a line and basically work our way across the valley like that. We're far enough apart to cover the valley, but close enough to each other to be able to make contact as quickly as possible. You notice anything wrong, get back to your vehicle and hit the red button on the radio, basically a panic button. Alerts will sound in the other vehicles, which is why nobody gets more than 100 yards away from them. And the tracking dot for the group sounding the alert begins to flash, so we all know who needs help and where they are in relation to the rest of us.
And then, Dalton said dryly, when everybody rushes to help?
Then we help. Hollis looked him in the eye, daring him to question. He smiled faintly, but didn't push it. Hollis didn't know whether to hope he trusted her and his other team members, or to be worried by his lack of concern for them. She looked around at her team. Everybody clear? We're looking for disturbed ground, old wells, caves, even a plowed field or a gully that looks odd. Trust your instincts, and alert the rest of us if you find anything you consider especially suspicious.
You mean if it feels wrong? Olivia asked.
Yes, if it feels wrong, if your instincts are in any way telling you to stay away, then do that, and call the rest of us. You have your maps with your search grids marked. When we're all in position, I want to do a radio check. We should have voice communication now, I hope, but even if we don't, the warning and tracking system is designed to work even in the middle of a much stronger energy field than we have here. In less than 15 minutes, the team moved out from their hotel and headed to their positions beginning about 2 miles outside town and a mile from the site of the first death. Then they went to work. Hollis was surprised but pleased to find that Dalton was very familiar with maps and with the rougher terrain she had assigned them along one of the outer edges of the valley, though when she thought about it she wondered if she should have been surprised. He had, after all, ended up in Kodiak, Alaska, and given his nature, he probably hiked into the wilderness regularly in order to get as far as he could from other people. Their radios worked, and rather well, which was another pleasant surprise. But if we don't find the source soon, she said to Reese and Dalton, I doubt that'll be the case.
Is the energy still intensifying? Reese asked her.
I think it's stronger than it was yesterday, she told him. Not so sure it's stronger than it was this morning. She hesitated, frowning slightly.
Something? Reese asked.
I don't know. Pretty much everybody in this valley is worried and horrified, so I'm getting a lot of that. A sort of uncomfortable feeling of people watching each other. But for just a minute there, I thought I got a flash of something else. Something driven.
A consciousness trying to control another mind?
Maybe, I'm not sure. Her frown deepened, and she added slowly, You know, That attempt, this morning, as eerie as it wasn't nearly as powerful as I'd expect. Unless...
Unless, Dalton supplied, everything that happened yesterday took more energy than whatever this consciousness expected. From the timeline you gave us, it looks like the worst murders took place early in the day. By the time Deputy Lonergan managed not to kill his wife, it was late in the day. What if that was less about his ability to resist and more about how much energy had been expended in that mad rush to kill as many people as possible while scaring the shit out of everybody else? Hollis blinked, surprised. She was sitting turned in her seat so she could see both her team members and caught a glint of amusement from Reese.
That could be it, couldn't it? Dalton asked absently as he studied the map.
Yes, Hollis told him. That could definitely be it.
Makes sense,
Reese murmured.
None of this makes sense, Dalton said, and then added, I think there's a ravine up ahead we should probably check out.
For all the world, Hollis told Bishop much later when she reported in that night, as if he'd said nothing remarkable. Did no one ever tell Dalton he's a born cop?
Apparently not, Bishop said.
I think he's right about the energy field, and I'm beginning to understand why we got the summons when we did. I'll bet nobody noticed anything out of the ordinary on Monday. Either the energy field didn't exist then, or else it was contained much lower to the ground and in a much smaller area around the source.
Do you believe it hasn't begun affecting anyone yet?
The opposite, Hollis told him. Reese and I stopped by the station before we came back to the hotel, and Katie filled us in on the results on all the deputies interviewing family and friends of those affected. It seems that both Leslie Gardner and Sam Bowers were class parents last weekend when their kids' class took a little prospecting trip out into the valley.
You believe they found the source?
I think there's a good chance they did, and probably never felt anything other than a twinge in their heads or a faint pressure they believed was the start of a sinus headache. Family reported that both of them suffered from allergies.
Very thorough deputies,
Bishop noted. Yeah, Archer has them well trained. They got a specific location for that class trip, and according to our maps, it's in a grid section we would have searched tomorrow. An area up against the raw cliff face that looks so weird all around the base of the valley, which would have been a perfect place for kids to dig up pretty rocks.
What's the plan?
We'll all head to that area first thing in the morning. If we find the source, and I hope to hell we do, given that it's probably building up to attack mode again, then we'll try to seal up the portal. Any ideas, by the way, on how we can do that?
Call me in the morning, Bishop said, before you head out there. We're still working on possible solutions.
Good, because I haven't given it much thought, she said ruefully.
Unsurprised, he said, we'll try to have some options for you. And one, I'm sorry to say, may be the weather.
What?
Afraid so. The latest forecasts show a storm system moving over the mountains sometime tomorrow.
Anything more specific? Hollis wasn't happy for several reasons. Because storms still bothered her, because they still interfered with her abilities, and because she was uneasily aware that the electrical and magnetic energy of a storm could very well intensify, even feed, the energy field in the valley.
Hell, it could detonate the energy for all they knew, and poof, no valley, at all.
Any unusual danger from this storm? Hollis heard herself ask.
No, nothing out of the ordinary, not for Prosperity and the valley. According to the Weather Service, the area of the mountains is well known to play host to highly unpredictable weather, going back hundreds of years.
Hollis felt an odd sensation she couldn't immediately identify, and when she could identify it, all she knew was that it was a deeply unsettling sense of familiarity.
Hollis?
Yeah, I'm still here, she said slowly.
Are you all right?
Yeah. Just deja vu or something.
Or something.
She concentrated, trying to grasp an elusive feeling even as it vanished like smoke through her fingers. Whatever it was is gone now, Bishop. Probably not important.
You know better, Hollis.
She drew a deep breath and let it out slowly, her gaze meeting DeMarco's slightly anxious one. Well, if I'm aware of it later on, I'll try to hold on to it longer. I don't know what else to tell you, Bishop. Look, I'll call you in the morning before we head out.
All right. I'll have whatever information and suggestions we settle on ready for you.
Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.
She hung up the phone, then looked with faint surprise at the handkerchief DeMarco held out to her. A slight tickling beneath her nose prodded her before he could, and she held the cloth to nostrils pinched shut, continuing to breathe through her mouth. Neither one of them said anything for several long minutes until Hollis dabbed at her no longer bleeding nose.
How weird is that? She murmured.
Hollis?
I wasn't trying to do anything, Reese, except to figure out what suddenly felt familiar. Bishop said something about the weather here being unstable going back hundreds of years, and I felt like I should have known that.
How? Why?
I have no idea. It was just a flash, a feeling of familiarity. Then it was gone.
You said déjà vu.
It was the first thing that came to mind. Just that the information about the weather didn't surprise me. As if I... Hell, I don't know.
You're scaring me a little bit.
I'm scaring myself.
She shook off the sensation as best she could, even though it left a lingering chill.
Very weird feeling.
Are you expecting a spirit?
She blinked at him.
What? No, why?
He reached over to touch her arm, his thumb gliding over goose flesh.
You're cold.
She stared at her own arm, then frowned at him.
Yeah, I am. I must be more tired than I thought.
After a moment, he said,
I think tonight the hot shower should come before the hot meal.
I think you're right.
14. Friday, October 10. Even though it was still very early when they set out the next morning, heavy clouds were already beginning to tease the mountain-made horizons, and now and then a faint rumble could be heard in the distance.
I hate storms, Hollis muttered, especially the ones that rumble around and around as if they have no idea where they want to be.
They were still at the hotel and about to climb into their vehicles, none of them happy about the storm.
Maybe it'll miss us, Dalton offered.
Are you a betting man?
Not really. Good, Reese told him. She always wins.
It's not my fault you don't know how to bluff, his partner told him virtuously. Stone face or no stone face.
Dalton lifted an eyebrow at the larger man.
Way I heard it, you don't have any tells. At all. I don't. Except with Hollis.
He made the admission calmly and without any sign of embarrassment whatsoever. Dalton wanted to say something about that, but whatever it was vanished from his mind. He found himself swinging around abruptly from the open door of the SUV, staring toward the end of the town that was not their destination. He was barely aware that Hollis and Reese were also facing the same direction, their faces grim.
Oh, shit, Hollis muttered.
She lifted both hands, her fingers massaging her temples, hard.
I'm only picking up intention.
Reese said, his voice unusually tense.
Scattered thoughts.
I'm getting more. A teacher. Young. Loves her work, but she's been getting more and more irritable lately. It's not her nature, not at all. But her head won't stop hurting. She needs to fix her life. And she... Oh, Christ. She has guns. More than one. And she knows how to use them. Galen, Reno, and Olivia approached them from one direction, while from the other came Sully, Victoria, and Logan. Galen said,
I studied that school when I drove all through Prosperity. Place is close to being a fortress. It's a newer school, and with all that's happened in recent years, they're all about security.
Maybe a fire drill? Olivia suggested.
Victoria said, I'm pretty sure they warn the teachers in advance now. So if there's anything unexpected, they know to get the kids somewhere safe.
Sully said, I can't pick up anything until I'm a lot closer. But get me close enough, and I'll tell you every single thing she's feeling.
Hollis was trying hard to sort through impressions, the panic and anxiety of the townspeople, the wordless terror of children, that angry, painful determination to fix a life that hadn't been broken.
Hollis, you have to stop.
Reese was there, holding his handkerchief to her bleeding nose.
I can't, she said thickly. You know I can't. How many kids will she kill? How many other teachers? That thing in her head's controlling her, and it wants a bloodbath.
You're feeling that? Reno asked sharply. The consciousness behind the energy?
Yeah, I think so. And it is familiar, damn it, I know it is.
Reese didn't waste any more time getting both arms around her.
Hollis.
That's better, she murmured. Don't let go.
I'm not about to, he said, grim.
He was standing behind her, one arm around her, holding her hard against his own body, while his free hand held the handkerchief to her nose.
Softly, Dalton said, Reese, her ears.
They were bleeding too.
Enough of this,
Reese said in a voice few had probably heard since his military days.
No.
Hollis's voice was quiet, but no less fierce. She's planning it now. I can't get her thoughts, just those awful feelings. Her mind's full of blood, just blood. We have to get closer to the school.
Her eyes were odd, almost glowing. Except for vehicles, there's no cover, Galen said in a calm voice that would have deceived anyone who didn't know him. Then vehicles will have to do. Reese said.
Archer, Sully began. But Hollis was shaking her head.
Not yet. We have to get close enough to know for certain what's going on there before we call in the troops, if we call them in.
Trained negotiators are too far away, and you know that's what he'll want. Never mind that it won't work. Never mind that you can't negotiate with evil. Kids are gonna die unless we stop this, and we have to be quiet.
He wants a big show. He wants a lot of cops, media, panic. He wants his bloodbath.
Who? Reno asked. Who's controlling her?
I think it was what started as a mindless evil. It just wanted to kill, to torture, to destroy.
But you said he seemed familiar, Dalton said to Reno.
Explanations later. I say we pile into two of the vehicles we have here and haul ass to that school.
She stared at him.
You're picking up my thoughts.
Well, of course I am,
he said irritably, grabbing her arm to hustle her into the light-colored BMW that was closest. Getting to the school was quick and easy, in part because Galen, leading the way in the black SUV with Hollis, Reese, and Olivia, tended to imprint maps in his head after exploring, and so took secondary roads where no traffic or traffic light slowed them down. And the school itself was as Galen had described, a modern building designed to keep children safe inside. There were numerous exits, of course, but every single member of Hollis's team knew that their best chance of getting all the children out alive would be to instantly incapacitate the female teacher, even now being urged by a powerful force to slaughter as many of them as she could. They gathered initially behind the hulking cover of the black SUV, and one glance was enough to show that both Sully and Dalton were being all but overwhelmed by the thoughts and emotions battering them.
Kids, Sully muttered. Somebody, for God's sake, teach me how to tune out kids. It's utter chaos.
Dalton nodded agreement, but his eyes were clearer, and he was frowning. Stay mad, Hollis told him softly. It's working.
He sent her a quick glance. Figured out my secret, huh? Hollis was still being all but held upright by her partner, but it appeared both her nose and ears had stopped bleeding. Enough, she told Dalton. Then she added to him and Sully, You two need to circle the building, slowly. Do your damnedest not to be seen. We need to know exactly where she is. We can't afford to make a mistake.
Copy. Both Sully and Dalton moved out cautiously.
Reese was looking at his partner.
She has guns.
We're going to make sure she never fires one of those guns.
How are we going to do that?
Reese asked politely.
We're going to depend on our rookies.
Hollis.
You said it yourself. Bishop said it. They were summoned, just like we were. They were meant to be here, meant to have parts to play in all this. We can't stop this without them. Every one of them has a gift we can use, every one of them.
After a moment, Reese said,
Archer's going to shoot all of us.
It all happened so fast, she said in an innocent tone. We just had to act.
Right.
Then Reese frowned.
I think Dalton's getting close.
Good. Judging by the way she's feeling, we're running out of time.
If you start bleeding again...
I won't. You're sharing energy with me. Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome. And stop scaring me like that, will you?
I'll do my best.
She turned her head to watch as Sully and Dalton slipped back through the cars in the lot until they reached the SUV.
We may be caught a break, Dalton said. She's in a fairly small classroom at the very end of a hallway, but it's packed with kids, little kids. I managed to catch a glimpse of a heavy-looking duffel bag half-hidden behind her desk. She looks... I don't think it's going to be much longer.
Not much longer at all, Sully added. There isn't just one voice in her head. There are dozens, hundreds, all whispering the same insane shit. I doubt we've got more than a couple of minutes before she digs into that bag and starts shooting.
Okay, then we move.
Hollis gestured for Galen, Olivia, Logan, Reno, and Victoria to draw closer. And this is what we're going to do. Whitney Neal knew, deep, deep down inside of her, that what she was thinking, what she was going to do, was insane. She knew that, somewhere deep inside. But wherever that place was, she couldn't seem to reach inside and grab hold of anything that would allow her to grip her own sanity. It seemed to have gone spinning off into some dark, noisy place. So there was just here. Just her usual classroom, with her usual, really very noisy students all talking and laughing at once, even though they were supposed to be paying attention to her. Even though she had already told them more than once to take their seats and listen to her. She had told them. She had. The voices in her head were adding to the cacophony until she could barely hear herself think. Until she couldn't think, couldn't do anything but finally give in and just stop fighting the voices. What was the use, after all? The voices would win. They always win. Always. Hollis and Victoria made it all the way down the interior hall to Miss Neal's classroom without being seen. Both knew they were on borrowed time, not only because Whitney Neal's face looked curiously plastic, curiously without expression, but also because Reno and Logan were in the school office hopefully buying at least a little time with some unbelievable explanations that surely wouldn't hold the principal long. Sully waited just outside the windows, ready in an instant to burst through them, and Reese had found his way into a supply closet that opened right into the classroom near the teacher's desk.
I can't, Victoria whispered for at least the 10th time. I've never been able to. All you have to do is keep her still,
Hollis whispered back.
Just for a few seconds, just long enough for me to get my hands on that bag. Once the guns are out of her reach, either one of us can take her. Hollis? Just concentrate, Victoria. I promise you, you can do this.
Victoria was pretty sure nobody had ever bet their life on her before, and she was damned sure nobody had bet the lives of dozens of kids on her. So she drew a deep breath, concentrated as hard as she could, and stopped Whitney Neal from ever touching one of the guns in her bag. Hollis thought Archer was honestly too stunned by what had so nearly happened at the school to have thought of most of the questions he should have asked. And Katie helped along with that, encouraging the kids to tell their self-important stories at the top of their lungs, even though not a single one of them had any clue as to what had so nearly happened. And Hollis, having picked up a few slippery tricks from Bishop over the years, managed to get herself and her people off school grounds and back to the even more necessary task of searching the valley for a doorway or portal for evil, and without explaining a single word more than she had to. "You're dangerous," Dalton told her. "Only on odd Thursdays. Besides, it worked, didn't it?" "You're a brave man," Dalton told DeMarco. "You have no idea," DeMarco replied.
"Very funny," his partner told him, then bent her attention to the map.
"Okay, I think a few more yards should do it. From there, we should move on foot." Dalton looked at her. "Are you sure you're all right? I mean, you look chipper as hell, but for a while there, I thought we might have to call EMS.
"I'm tougher than I look," she told him.
"And too stubborn to argue with, usually," DeMarco added.
"I'll get you for that,"
Hollis told her partner, but didn't follow it up with any details, rather to Dalton's disappointment. They had driven their vehicles to within 50 yards of the location marked on Hollis's map, and were now approaching the area cautiously. Hollis, DeMarco, and Galen were all armed now, even though Hollis was certain nothing living awaited them. Nor did she expect spiritual energy, since the pressure and faint but pounding headache she was always conscious of whenever she was in this valley and outside DeMarco's shields had never once reminded her of a spirit's visit. But it hadn't gone away, either.
"Mediums. I'm here. Logan's here. Why would we need mediums?"
"Hey, look!" Dalton, several yards to the left of Hollis and DeMarco, was pointing at the oddly sheer cliff face they were approaching. For a moment, Hollis didn't see whatever he was pointing at, but then a shaft of sunlight fought its way through the clouds and touched the cliff face. There was a brief glitter as the light touched bits of mica embedded in the raw earth, and that was when Hollis saw the opening. It seemed to dance before her eyes for a moment or two, a gash in the earth and hard rock that was less than a cave and more than a simple crevice. About twice the height of a tall man, the opening was clearly no more than a couple of feet wide. And the tumble of granite boulders piling at the base of the shadowy opening was mute evidence that it was either recently created or recently opened. Sully said,
"Didn't Bishop say something about tremors being recorded here?"
Hollis nodded slowly, her gaze on that oddly inviting doorway.
"Yeah, very faint tremors over the last month or so. Not bad enough to damage anything man-made, but still worrying in a moderate earthquake zone."
Victoria said,
"Shield or not, I can feel something coming out of there, almost like hot air."
"Ha, I knew she was sensitive to energy," Hollis thought. While she was busy coping with a return of that odd sense of familiarity, it took Hollis a moment or two and a surprising amount of willpower to tear her gaze away to look at the younger woman, and then before she could say anything to Victoria, she saw just beyond her Galen, who was standing utterly still and staring at the opening with a completely unfamiliar, almost mesmerized expression. Hollis felt a sudden stab of anxiety she couldn't have explained.
"Galen."
"It's familiar," he said slowly. "I want to go inside." "Nobody's going in there," DeMarco said.
Hollis was trying to juggle about a dozen different thoughts, one of them an echo of Galen's desire to enter the portal.
That's what it was, a portal, a doorway. Why shouldn't we go inside? How could that be wrong?
"Hollis,
We don't have much in common, Galen and me. But there is one really big thing. Except that it can't possibly be connected to this, can it? It was, what was it? A year and a half ago? And far away. Well, relatively.
Hollis. She suddenly became aware of Reese's hand gripping her arm and stared down at that touch for an instant before looking up at him and feeling the almost tactile sense of a cool breeze blowing past her, maybe even through her.
Back with us? He asked politely.
Hollis blinked at him. Then she drew a deep breath and let it out slowly.
Wow. Whatever you've got packs quite a wallop.
Hollis.
Well, it does. She heard quiet laughter and realized it was Victoria and, rather surprisingly, Dalton who were laughing at her. Or with her. Whatever. She straightened slightly, wondering if the urge to lean against him had blown in with the breeze. Reese didn't let go of her arm, which she was glad about because that cool breeze was dissipating the last wisps of whatever had drifted into her mind. And that was a sobering realization. Very sobering.
We need to close that up, she said quickly. Now, before the storm gets here.
Shouldn't we? Logan began in an unconsciously fascinated voice. No, we shouldn't. Reese was right. Nobody's going in there. Hollis forced herself to remember every suggestion Bishop and his team had made about how to close and seal this portal. Her instincts were peculiarly quiet about it.
I can do it, Olivia said suddenly.
She was standing only a few feet away from Galen, her anxious gaze leaving him to fix on the portal still yards away from them. Reno said, Those rocks look damned heavy. Olivia sent her a quick smile.
I used to think that mattered, studied all sorts of formulas about mass and density. Until I realized all I really had to do was want to move something.
It had been one of the possibilities Bishop had suggested, Hollis remembered, depending on what kind of portal they found and whether there was enough relatively loose rock around it. It was, he had said, one possible reason why Olivia had been summoned. And it looked like enough rock to Hollis.
If you're sure, she began.
It's what I do. Olivia said.
Then things began to happen so quickly it was almost a blur of motion and sounds and cold darts of fear. Olivia began to lift both hands, rather like a small but very determined magician about to conjure, and when there was sudden movement from the portal, most of those watching realized on some level it was happening too fast, that Olivia had not had time to do this. A huge boulder none of them had paid attention to several yards to one side of the portal rocked suddenly, then lifted and hurtled toward Olivia as though flung by some careless giant.
A threat, Hollis realized in those frozen seconds. I should have known only rage would have been the result when we stopped his bloody school massacre. He's beyond angry. He wants to kill us all.
And energy, once freed, was not easily contained again. Except by a fury even greater and more powerful than disembodied energy could ever be.
Olivia!
Hollis wondered later, when there was time to wonder, whether Galen's instincts had kicked in. So many years spent watching over various SCU agents, guarding their backs, protecting them and what they were doing. Maybe that was it. Or maybe it was something else. He moved with blinding speed, grabbing Olivia and both pulling her out of the way and pushing her to safety, out of the path of the boulder. It slammed into him with an audible sound Hollis had never gotten used to, over half a ton of granite meeting flesh and bone, crushing and mangling. No! Wrenching herself away from Sully and Logan, who had practically caught her in midair, Olivia darted around the boulder toward the portal and lifted both arms as she had before. But this time there was a roar like a tornado passing, and the rocks and boulders piled around the portal and for yards in every direction were swept up as if in that tornado, lifting and swirling and then slamming into the portal with terrific force.
As if they knew, the smaller rocks and boulders wedged themselves into the cracks and crevices, while the larger ones found larger openings, granite scraping across granite as they forced themselves in tightly, blocking the portal until there wasn't a single chink where anything could have gotten in or out. In the sudden silence, Hollis felt her ears pop and yawned widely to ease a different kind of pressure.
"Wow," she muttered. "Cool ability."
Dalton, surveying the closed portal with calm satisfaction, said,
"I'd forgotten how impressive that was."
Hollis looked at Olivia as she slumped slightly, then looked up at her partner.
"Looking fragile does not mean being fragile," she said in a tone of realization.
"I figured that out a while back," DeMarco said.
"Yeah?"
"Yeah."
Before Hollis could comment further, there was a groan and a curse from beneath the rock, followed by Galen's voice.
"Little help here?"
Olivia whirled with a gasp, her hands lifted again, and the boulder rose off Galen's fallen self and rolled away.
"Damn, that hurt."
He didn't sit up immediately, but did lift a hand to rather gingerly work his jaw. There was blood on his face, on as much of him as was visible, and under the fascinated eyes of the observers, it seemed to soak back into his skin, disappearing within moments. Olivia dropped to her knees beside him.
"I thought you were dead," she said unsteadily.
"That was why," Hollis realized suddenly, "why you had to be here."
"That was why."
He moved a bit gingerly, telling Olivia,
"It's not so easy to kill me."
He sat up finally with no more than a wince.
"People are always trying to kill him,"
Hollis told Olivia.
"Even Reese did once."
Olivia stared up rather uncertainly at the tall blonde man standing beside Hollis.
"It's a long story," DeMarco told her.
"No, it isn't," Galen said.
"You shot me twice."
"There were extenuating circumstances,"
DeMarco said, then added almost immediately,
"Let's not get into war stories, all right, Galen? We're not quite finished here."
"I didn't think so."
Galen got to his feet and stretched briefly, then extended a hand to help Olivia up.
"You're going to give them all the wrong idea," Hollis told him severely. "Not everybody can come back from death."
Galen eyed her.
"No?"
"There were extenuating circumstances," she said after a brief pause.
"Uh-huh. I think I heard somebody say this portal needed to be sealed."
"Right, yes. The portal may be sealed with rocks, but it needs energy to seal it for good. And then there's all the energy contained in this valley.
Until that's transformed or allowed to disperse harmlessly, some other citizen could pick up a few guns and decide to hold a turkey shoot." A sudden rumble of thunder made Hollis wince.
"Damn. I don't know if that's gonna help or just get in the way."
Dalton, frowning at her, said,
"You don't need to channel the lightning?"
"God, I hope not. That's very disconcerting and unpleasant. No, I think there's enough energy left here in the valley."
"Energy that came through the portal? Sure you want to do that?"
"I think it's the only thing that will truly seal the portal," she told him. "At least, that's what my instincts are finally telling me. The energy was created there. It's where it belongs. And now's the time. The energy is still tied in a way to the portal, but the longer we wait to put it back where it belongs, the harder it's going to be. This is where it needs to go."
"What about the consciousness?"
"It's still in there," Hollis said,
nodding toward the blocked doorway.
"Underground, where it came from, I think. I still have that sense of familiarity, but it's tenuous. I'm not sure I'll ever figure out what that was about. Not sure I can, either, as long as it stays buried the way it belongs. Anyway, if we ever figure it out, I'll bet we find some human-shaped monster behind it."
She frowned at her partner.
We'll need to check all the old wells and any other openings we can find in the valley for energy. I think once this main energy field has been redirected to seal the portal, any other openings should be easy to block. May take some time, though.
It's still early, DeMarco noted, and we can easily stay another day or two.
That sounds good, his partner told him. She opened her mouth to say something else, then stared past DeMarco, her eyes widening. They all turned instinctively to see what Hollis was staring at with such pleasure, and Hollis was heard to say much later that it was the sort of thing that made her psychic rookies either sign on for life or take to their heels. Nobody ran.
Ruby,
she said with more than a little awe.
I thought I'd never see you again.
She had been young in life, her most recent life, at any rate, but there was something very wise and very ancient in her eyes. She touched down lightly, only a few feet from Hollis, smiling, her wings folding neatly so they were very nearly invisible.
I had to visit you here,
she said, her voice sweet without being at all childlike.
This was where Samuel began, you know.
What? The Reverend Adam Deacon Samuel? How many times do we have to kill that son of a bitch before he stays dead? Who is or was Samuel? Reno asked, her fascinated gaze on the angel. I think he was Satan, Hollis told her. Some might disagree. He didn't have any charm at all. Ruby was smiling.
His flesh died long ago, you know that. Even the vessels he borrowed. But even evil has its beginning somewhere, sometime. This place was the nexus of his beginning. You've known for a long time, Hollis, that there hadn't yet been an end to him, and that there had to be. Which is why you, all of you, were summoned here. To finish it.
Logan spoke slowly. Are you a spirit?
That depends, she replied gravely. Are you glad you can see me?
He drew a breath and let it out slowly.
I really think I am.
Then I'm a spirit, and we'll see each other again, Logan. But first, a few of us are going to help you and Hollis and Victoria make a few doorways in that energy dome. And then they, with Reese's help, will bring the energy needed here to seal this portal once and for all.
Suddenly finding her voice, Victoria said,
Me? That's impossible. I'm not... Energy isn't my thing.
Hollis laughed suddenly. I think you're all going to find that impossible is a word we don't use in the SCU. There really isn't a place for it there.
But, come on, Victoria, why don't you help us?
Victoria shook her head.
What? I can't do that.
Of course you can, Hollis told her.
I don't know how.
Of course you do.
Hollis?
Come on, we'll show you.
Oh, damn.
Victoria glared half-heartedly around at her team members, then moved toward Hollis.
Everybody better stand back. Angels can't be killed, can they? Ruby,
I'll be fine, Victoria, and so will you. But I don't know what I'm doing.
But in the end, of course, Hollis and the others were right. Victoria did know what she was doing. The really peculiar thing, Archer told them later, was that he had managed to trace the nearly ancient belt and gloves they'd found not far from the sealed portal. The items had belonged to a man who, though unnoticed by the history books, had quite likely been one of the first serial killers to ever visit evil on the young colonies of America. Hunted by a group of men from an eastern territory, accused of murdering at least 3 young women, Adam Deacon had been run to ground in the valley near what had been a small mining camp where Prosperity now stood. Caught with blood literally on his hands and the body of the favorite daughter of a wealthy family at his feet, he had been chased up into the mountains by a mob howling for his blood. There hadn't been much law and order in those days, and when Miners had thrown his mostly dead body into an abandoned shaft and collapsed it behind him, no one had thought it anything other than justice. Archer hadn't been able to find out much more about Deacon, but Bishop had more resources. And he soon found out all they were ever likely to about Adam Deacon. He'd been accused of at least another dozen murders, all of them bloody. But the most peculiar thing was that as a young man before his rampage began, Deacon had been struck by lightning. Twice. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Hold Back the Dark by Kay Hooper. Performed by Joyce Bean. Engineered by Stephen Jacoby. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number. 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.